Case for argument this morning is the Samuel C. Johnson Trust against Bayfield County.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Nording. I represent Bayfield County. There is a single question in this case, I believe, on appeal. What is the effect on a property interest when the United States Attorney disclaims that interest in a quiet title action? Our proposition is simply that this court should seek the result that Congress intended for such a disclaimer in the circumstances of this case. And the Congress's intent is especially important here because it's Congress that created the property interest that we are dealing with here. It created that interest in the acts that granted rights of way to the railroads. It is Congress that provided for the disposition of that property interest, first by the creation of 43 U.S. Code Section 912 in 1922, and secondly, later in 1988, through the creation of Section 1248 sub C. And further, it was Congress who created the disclaimer procedure whereby the government, by filing a disclaimer in a quiet title action, may extricate itself from the litigation. Now, the property interest that the Congress created is a contingent future interest, sometimes called a reversionary interest here. And very simply, it was if the right-of-way were abandoned for railroad purposes, then the right-of-way would go back to the United States. And let's make no mistake that the right-of-way that we're dealing with in this case is one in which such a property interest, such a future contingent interest exists, because this court has held that very thing, at least as to the parcels in the odd-numbered sections on this railroad in the Mahler case. As to the even-numbered sections, no court has yet ruled.
When you say this court has held that, you lose me. I looked up our opinion in that case. The district court had held that, but that issue did not seem to have been among the issues taken up on appeal. Is there some place in our opinion that I'm missing that actually addresses that question? Or did we just assume it in light of the party's litigation strategy?
I would have to say that in all candor that I know for certainty that the district court held that the interest existed.
The district court certainly held that.
Yes, I cannot say for certainty that this court did.
Because so far as I could see, our opinion didn't address it.
That may be.
And I don't think the parties had briefed it.
That may be. But the district court's decision was affirmed, of course. Now, and as to the even-numbered sections, no court has yet ruled. But the trial court, in ruling on the effect of the disclaimer, did assume that the interest that we're talking about here, this reversionary interest, did exist. Mm-hmm. Now, in 1922, I mentioned Congress enacted Section 912, creating a scheme of disposition. And I maintain that that scheme of disposition speaks volumes as to the intent of Congress under the circumstances of this case. Because the scheme that was created said this: if there is an abandonment within the meaning of that statute, and if a local government embraces the right-of-way as a public highway within a period of 1 year thereafter, then the interest, the property interest, goes to the local government. And if there is an abandonment within the meaning of the statute...
Why are you discussing only abandonments? Statute talks about forfeitures.
Yes.
What's your understanding of the meaning of forfeiture in 912?
I believe the forfeiture would occur if the property were given to the railroad to create a railroad and it never followed through to create a railroad. Then it would forfeit the right to the property. That didn't occur here.
And your belief is based on what? Is there some authoritative...
I can't cite you a case to that effect off the top of my head, I'm sorry to say.
Well,
but that is my understanding of the distinction.
Off the top of your head is not really what I was seeking.
Yes, sir.
Let me say why I ask this.
Yes.
A lot of your argument depends on the submission that abandonment happens only after it's been declared by a court or an act of Congress, a very peculiar reference to acts of Congress, as if members of Congress were judges. But forfeiture may be outside that. It's easy to imagine forfeiture happening by private activity, independent of judicial declarations. That's why I'm interested in the question.
I understand
maybe
that,
since
Your
the
Honor.
Parties haven't addressed it, it's not something before us. But it intrigued me looking at this statute.
I understand. I have explained my understanding of the of how forfeiture is used there.
Yeah, well, I'd be much more interested if you had some authority for how forfeiture is used.
I do not. It was not argued by the opposition, I don't believe, that there's a forfeiture involved here. And I would say as to the whether or not the question as to whether or not an abandonment for purposes of the statute has occurred in this case, once again, is a matter that goes to the merits, underlying merits of the case, which were not decided by the district court, but the district court did assume that abandonment for purposes of Section 912 had not yet occurred. Now, the scheme in Section 912 that I was describing was first, if the abandonment occurs under the meaning of the statute and a local government embraces the right of way for public highway purposes within 1 year thereafter, property goes to the local government.
So this is a conveyance by the railroad to the adjacent landowners, and then if the municipality intervenes within 1 year, then it reverses the municipality. Is that the way it works?
No, I don't believe a conveyance by the railroad is the triggering factor. The key is whether or not there has been an abandonment declared by a court of competent jurisdiction or by act of Congress.
There was no conveyance by the railroad in this case?
There was, yes. Mm-hmm. There was a conveyance by the railroad, but there's been no declaration of abandonment by a court of competent jurisdiction.
Of course, it was the conveyance by the railroad as well as the ICC's decision that caused the forfeiture bell to go off in my mind. Maybe that the conveyance was the completed forfeiture.
I don't believe so, but that's not been argued, I don't believe.
Well, it may be that any question about the meaning of forfeiture has been forfeited, but it's still something of a puzzle. Anyway, go ahead.
I'll just complete the one point that I was making relative to Congress intent as reflected in Section 912. The second part of the dispositional scheme there was, if there is an abandonment within the meaning of the statute,
tell me again, sorry to interrupt you there. Abandonment requires what now?
It requires that for purposes of the statute that there be a decree by a court or declaration by a court of competent jurisdiction, or that it be determined by act of Congress.
So a year doesn't start to run until that occurs.
Until that happens. That's correct, and that has not happened. Now, the second part of this dispositional scheme provided that if a local government does not embrace the right-of-way as a public highway, then the interest would go to adjoining landowners. Now, my point was that in 1922, Congress effectively disclaimed the U.S. interest by setting up this scheme, in the sense that in no event from 1922 to 1988 was the interest going to go back to the United States. And yet, did that destroy the interest, as Judge Shabazz ruled? No, it did not. The interest, and specifically the right of the municipalities to create these public highways, was retained and still retained.
Municipalities have that right because they step into the shoes of the United States. What if the United States, back in 1950, had sold its reversionary interest to, you know, suppose there is somebody out there gathering up reversionary interests in the hope that railroads will fail. The United States raised some money for the Treasury by selling its reversionary interest to J.P. Morgan and Company. What effect would that have on Bayfield County?
I think the answer is this. I think the answer to the question you're basically asking is, are there ways in which the United States could have cut off the rights Greenfield County.
I'd really like you to answer the question I'm actually answering.
Well,
I'm actually asking.
I think had that...
If the United States had sold for $10,000 its reversionary interest...
I believe that would have cut off our rights.
But then why does the United States disclaimer, which is the same thing as selling the right for nothing, not cut off your rights?
I don't believe that a disclaimer is the same as selling the right for nothing. A disclaimer is to say we're not claiming. And they've all the United States, through the Congress, had already set up a disposition for how the right would be transferred.
Let me tell you what my thinking is. What lies behind the question is, a disclaimer normally means that the right goes to whoever is next in line at the time of the disclaimer. But as you have characterized the county's rights don't come about until there's been a formal declaration of abandonment by a judge or an act of Congress. Until then, the county's rights are merely potential. So at the time the United States disclaimed, it looked like whoever was next in line was the fee owner of the property rather than the county. So the rights would have vested in them.
I don't.
That's what gives rise to this inquiry.
But the scheme of disposition for this property interest no longer disposes of the interest to the adjoining owner. So it wouldn't. They're not next in line. That's what's so peculiar about the result Judge Shabazz reached here.
That's what gets me, because when you emphasize that the county's rights don't spring until the formal declaration of abandonment by a court, it looks like at the time of the disclaimer, the county was not anywhere in line. The United States just had these rights, could sell them or give them to whoever the United States pleased, and by disclaiming, it gave them to the landowner.
Well, I guess we've got to the heart of the issue, which is, by disclaiming, what did they do? And our contention would be, by disclaiming, they merely stated, we are not going to take or receive this property. But the Congress had already set up a scheme for circumstances under which others, such as the county, could receive the property.
In your view, if the United States had, instead of filing a disclaimer, had sold the land to the Johnson Trust for a peppercorn, then the county's rights are extinguished?
I would have to say that I do not believe that the statutes regulating the use of these rights of way, including 1248C and the 1248DE, permit the United States to do that.
Well,
I think they're directed by the Congress to retain the rights.
Well, these statutes don't, but my assumption is the United States has other rights with respect to the sale of land. It would have to comply with whatever those rules are.
Yeah, but with regard to railroad rights-of-way in particular, the Congress has established a scheme whereby they want the United States to retain those rights for potential future use for trails. That's the result that Judge Shabazz circumvented.
Whoa. That implies, I think, that your answer to my earlier hypothetical should have been, back in 1950, the United States would not have been allowed to sell the land this third party.
That may be, but what I'm really thinking about as the control on the United States' inability to sell it was enacted in 88.
Is there some other statute that limits the United States' ability to sell this reversionary interest? Anything other than the 1988 statute or Section 1912?
I think, no, 1248 C, D, and E, I think, do.
Mm-hmm.
None other that I know of.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. And Mr. Nording, we've taken a lot of your time, so I'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal. You can plan on.
Thank you, sir.
Plan on coming back if need be. Ms. Fex.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The district court was correct in holding that even if federal interest did exist at the point when the United States filed its disclaimer, that no rights to such interest had vested in the
county. Ms. Fex, before we get very far, I'm worried about subject matter jurisdiction here. At least two of your three clients say that they never acquired land through these old land grant programs. So what are they doing here?
Your Honor, Bayfield County has placed a cloud on their title based on allegations that Section 912 vested in Bayfield County the right to...
Yes, but by their own allegations, Section 912 has nothing to do with this case because their predecessors in the chain of title did not include the U.S. land grant program.
That is true, Your Honor. But well,
in order to come within federal jurisdiction, the complaint has to allege, has to be a well-pleaded complaint that turns on an interpretation of federal law. And the allegation of these plaintiffs is that nothing in our rights turns on federal law. Yours sincerely, the plaintiffs. It does seem to create a problem with jurisdiction, does it not?
Your Honor, I believe the district court has original jurisdiction on the matter for the S.C. Johnsons, and I believe that the district court has the discretion to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over the Hawksford and Dean Johnson families' claims.
Wait. This is, you're relying on 1367? This is not in your brief, by the way.
This issue was not in dispute, Your Honor.
Subject matter jurisdiction is always an issue. Always. It cannot be waived. It cannot be stipulated. It cannot be ignored.
Your Honor, if I may refer you to our complaint, where we did argue we were requesting relief, declaratory relief, to remove the cloud on title that had been placed on all three sets of plaintiffs, all family members in this action. Bayfield County has been contending that that Section 912 has conferred a right onto Bayfield County to take the Hawksford and the Dean Johnson families' properties. And for that reason, we were seeking for declaratory judgment on behalf of the Hawksfords and the Dean Johnsons, in addition to the removal of cloud of title for the S.C. Johnson family.
I think it would probably be prudent for both sides to file within 10 days briefs addressing whether there is subject matter jurisdiction with respect to the two plaintiffs who affirmatively assert that Section 912 has nothing to do with their entitlements.
Yes, Your Honor. The district court's judgment was based on the assumption that there existed federal reversionary interests at the time that the United States filed its disclaimer. But no rights to any federal interests had vested in Bayfield County at that point. Through the disclaimer, therefore, any federal interests were eliminated, and 1248C and 912 cannot apply here. For those reasons, Your Honors, the district court's judgment quieting title in the plaintiffs as against Bayfield County was appropriate and should be affirmed. But a second and independent reason for affirming the district court's judgment quieting title would be that Section 912 operated to dispose of any federal interests that may have existed back in 1978, not to retain them for decades in perpetuity. This finding would be consistent with the district court's judgment and would also achieve the important public policy objective of clearing the title and restoring the marketability.
What is your understanding of the answer to my hypothetical to Mr. Nording? Back in 1950, the United States sells its reversionary right to J.P. Morgan, which is trying to gather rights to make another stab at building the Union Pacific Railroad. He did it once. His successor company can do it again. Would the United States be legally entitled to sell its reversionary right to J.P. Morgan? And if so, what would be the legal consequence, as you understand it?
Yes, Your Honor. The United States would be entitled to alienate its future interests, sell those interests, those federal reversionary interests, and those interests would vest in J.P. Morgan.
What would be the source of authority to sell the reversionary interest?
Well, Your Honor, I do not know what statutes were in effect as to the ability for the U.S. to sell those back in 1950s, but not until 1976 did the U.S. Change its policies for for disposing of land and rather retaining them. And so because the United States owned those federal reversionary interests.
Make it 1990. Let's pick a time when the statutes were the same as they are now, but the railroad is still in operation. It's before it asked the ICC for leave to give up and go home. Could the U.S. sell its reversionary interest?
16 U.S.C. concerns abandoned federal railway interests, not operating federal interests. So I do not know, Your Honor, if there are any constraints on the United States under 16 U.S.C. 1248 to prevent the United States from selling reversionary interests prior to the abandonment of those interests. If Your Honor's question goes to the situation here where those interests were abandoned in 1978, then at that point under Section 912, the interests would already have transferred and vested in the owners of the underlying subdivision according to Section 912. Back in 1978, that was the railroad as to the odd Section 21 because the railroad company here owned not only the right-of-way but lands on both sides of that right-of-way. In the even sections, the owners of the underlying subdivision were the predecessors' interests to the Hoxford and Dean Johnson families. So back in 1978, under the 912 scheme, if at that point when the right-of-way was abandoned, under 912, the United States' interest transferred to the underlying owners of the subdivisions, and only if Bayfield County had established a legal highway within 1 year of 1978, would their interest have advanced before the plaintiffs.
That's a different problem. You're disagreeing with them about when the year runs. But that's a question the district judge never reached.
That's correct, Your Honor.
If they're correct about when the year runs, we have to resolve the issue the district judge resolved, which is the effect of the disclaimer.
Yes.
Before the year had run.
That is true. We believe that you can affirm the district court on the alternative basis. But as to that disclaimer, Congress gave broad authority to the AG's office in filing a disclaimer in a quiet title action. In a quiet title action.
That doesn't help you. Your argument is that they disclaimed and so it went to you, and that the county's argument is that they disclaimed but the year hadn't run and so it went to them. I mean, without figuring that out, it's not clear how we can know who got the remainder after the disclaimer.
Well, it is very clear under 912 and 1248C that nothing has vested in Bayfield County at this point. Those statutes require contingencies be satisfied, and those contingencies simply have not been satisfied, and Bayfield County agrees to this. So the only way that Bayfield County can win is if the disclaimer was not effective here. But Congress has granted broad powers to the AG's office, and in addition to that, Congress could have, if it wanted to, could have excluded federal reversionary interests from 2409A. It did not do so. It excluded water rights under 2409A subpart A. It excluded security interests, but it did not exclude federal reversionary interests. Therefore, at the point when the U.S. filed its disclaimer, no interest had vested in Bayfield County, and the disclaimer was fully effective under the Quiet Title Action. The Quiet Title Action has that substantive effect. So Bayfield County is arguing it agrees that it has no vested interest, but argues it has a contingent interest. Well, the contingent interest relies on the disclaimer not being effective. But again, under 2409A, there are no constraints on the AG's office. There are exclusions. They do not include the federal reversionary interests. And the AG had full and broad power to disclaim any interest it wished to. It didn't have to offer a reason for it. And the court's role there is to confirm the disclaimer. It does not say confirm the disclaimer unless the court finds 1, 2, and 3. No, the court is to confirm the disclaimer. It does have an unless provision, however, for jurisdiction. So the court loses jurisdiction unless there are independent grounds for a jurisdiction. And in this situation, there was for this court. I see my time is up, Your Honors. Are there any more questions?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Norden.
Thank you.
sole question here is not whether the disclaimer was effective to do anything. It was the disclaimer to do something effective to do something to the underlying property interest, this contingent property interest, other than to say the United States is not going to take the interest. Now, the trial court relied on one single case for its analysis, the Jewett case, and made three mistakes in doing so. One, it relied on a dissenting opinion, which was the view of three judges out of nine. Two, the rationale of the dissent does not even apply in this instance, because the rationale of Justice Blackmun rested on the distinction between a transferor of property who chooses the recipient and a disclaimant who does not choose a recipient. But in this instance, that distinction is meaningless because the transferor and the disclaimant are the same party, namely the United States. And finally, even the Jewett dissent gave the disclaimer a very limited effect, far from the sweeping effect that Judge Shabazz gave it here. And I'll close with this statement from Judge Blackmun's opinion about the effect of the disclaimer. Petitioner's disclaimer merely renounced any future right to receive the corpus of the trust, did not direct or even purport to direct future distribution of that corpus. But that's exactly the opposite of the result that Judge Shabazz reached.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.